Yehoshua proclaimed Yericho to be cherem. That no one should take anything, should touch anything. And Achan did. So Achan took from the cherem. Vayichraf Hashem Yisrael. But this, at the present point, they didn't quite yet know about it. Okay, now before we start the next section, I'm going to have a slight little, introduction to it. And the introduction starts out with Pasuk in Tehillim. Pasuk in Tehillim, Mem Dalad Dalad, Gimel Dalad, says, it's really the whole beginning from Beis, but I'm just going to read the key Pasuk, which is Dalad. Says, we were told faithfully over from our fathers what happened. Ato yadcha goyim harashta titoyim Torah u'umim tishalchem. You with your hand helped us inherit the nations for titoyim, and you implanted us there. Torah u'umim tishalchem. You wiped out the nations and sent them out. And this is the next passage, it's very key. Ki lo v'chor rom yarshu aretz v'zron v'hoshia ramo. They did not inherit the land with the sword. Their forearms did not save them. It rather was your right hand, Hashem's right hand, and his strong arm, the light of Hashem's face, because you were happy with them, because they found favor with you. Mim Dalad Dalad. Tehillim Mim Dalad Dalad. Lo b'chor mim yarshu aretz. Now, similarly, we see in the beginning of Sefer HaShoftim, Per Gimel, Pasuk Aleph and Beis, Pesukim say that there are different nations left over. Why were they left over? Rak v'mar das, to test the Jewish people who did not know the wars of the Yerusha. Rak v'mar das teres b'nei Yisrael olam d'melchama, rak asher v'fanim v'yudom. In order that the generations of the children of Israel should learn about war, that the earlier generations did not know. So it's a little funny, It says that the people who of Sefer Shoftim had to learn about war, and the earlier generations didn't. And it's a little funny because one would think that the earlier generations also knew something about war. They went and had to fight battles to inherit the land. So that's another confirmation of the Pasuk in Tehillim, Ki lo b'chor b'chorim yarshu aretz. On the main and on the whole, it wasn't that we conquered Eretz Yisrael through strength of the sword, and through military prowess, through military tactics. Rather, it was with Hashem's help. And we'll see. I'm just showing that. I think it's fairly patently open that the battle of Yericho, which Ki'ilu is not much of a battle. We'll see. But I think in Yericho, I think everyone will agree without, they just walked around the city seven times, each day a time, then Ban Shana seven times, blew shofars, and the walls fell down. So that's really not, that's not normal battle tactics. That's open clearness. And as the Pasuk said earlier, and I pointed out last week, Pasuk says that Hashem put the city of Yericho and all their soldiers in Bnei Yisrael's hands. And we used the cat and mouse, parable to explain it. Okay, let's go on. Now this is there's so much to do tonight. We're gonna just get as much done as we can. And again, as I've announced other weeks, is probably I'm gonna go past 7 o'clock. Whoever wants to leave at 7 o'clock should feel 100% free to leave at 7. As long as there are 3 people left, I'll go on. But if you really want to leave, just leave. That's it.
As long as you just walk and talk to Dan.
That's like more informal, but yeah, you could do that. You could do that too. Okay. Yeshua sends out people to spy out Ai. Ai wasn't far from Beis El. spy it out, see what's going on there. They come back and say, "Send only send 2,000 or 3,000 people there. It's not worth, you know, wasting everyone's time." So Pasuk says they sent around 3,000 people, and Vayanusuf Ne'anshe'ai, and they were defeated. Vayakum Behem Anshe'ai Kishoshim Shishaish. They lost approximately 36 men. Funny, wait a second. Vayidufim Ufnei Ashar Adas Shvarim Vayakum Bemara Vayimus Levava Am Vayim Haim. They were, you know, they were defeated in front of Morad, and everyone was like terrified, and their hearts turned to water. Well, if I assume, you know, as this is Nach Bagias, everyone basically read the story, the complete population of Ai was 12,000. That says when they finally conquer Ai. So if they're 12,000, including women and children, then one would assume that, you know, the 2,000 to 3,000 original estimate is definitely accurate. That there couldn't have been in the Ai, it's hard to believe there were more than 2,000 to 3,000 soldiers. Because it wasn't, well, you know, take 12, divide it by 2, you get a 6,000 men, 6,000 women. But all the men are not of battle age. So you have to take some of those out. Let's say 3,000, 2,500, 3,000, it's probable. In other words, if you're asking in terms of military science, was the original estimate right? Well, it was. It was accurate. It was accurate. That's what I would say. I don't think it was a mistake. Why is it that they didn't want to send everybody? So there is a Gemara in Megillah, which I think I mentioned last week, but maybe I didn't. That when the Malach, maybe I didn't mention it. When the Malach met Yehoshua outside of Gilgal, outside of Yericho, he told him you have to be very careful with Bittul Torah. Don't waste too many people's times. Everyone, as many people need to be learning as possible. So according to that Gemara, it's very well understood why they only wanted to send such a small amount of people. What does everyone have to go? Why is it necessary for everyone to go? Only the minimal amount of people need to go. And about everyone else just to stay and sit and learn, and you shouldn't have a problem. So according to Mark Miguel, it works pretty smoothly. Okay, now, Kishloshim B'Sheish Ish is like really funny. I mean, I more or less think anyone who reads it understands it. If it's like, let's say, around 100, or maybe even 50, that's like you could say about 50 people died, about 100 people died, about 1,000 people died. But about 36 people is funny. It's just straight funny. Now, you have to know that there's really a machlokas about this, and I'm not going to have time even to mention all the opinions, because if I did, we wouldn't get anywhere. But there's a machlokas. Some learn it does mean 36, what are you saying? Other, even though it always is like 36, still learn it means 36. Others learn, and it's a midrash, I think the Radak brings it, V'yesh mi Rabbi Seinu, Sha'ar Moshuchaf at Tibyon. It wasn't 36 people, it was Yar ben Menashe. The only person who died was Yar ben Menashe, and he was equivalent to 36 people, in other words, Rov of Sanhedrin. And that, of course, the phrase, like 36, is just funny. Why have like 36? Clear?
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Okay, let's go on. Okay, guys.
And that
Let's go. Let's go. Well, I want to see the next piece before we go on and explain that question. Yeah.
Is this one person?
So according to the Midrash, one person died who's equivalent to 36 people, not just 36 people, but 36 is symbolically chosen because it is the majority of Sanhedrin.
So does that mean no one died
in Yericho? Very good. Yes, that means that is a correct inference that one can infer that no one died in Yericho. Okay, now let's go. Someone. That means patience.
Tonight we're talking about this.
Okay. Vayikra Yeshua Samazam. Vayikra Yeshua Samazam tears his clothes and he's lying on the ground and he's saying and he's crying and everyone else is also Yehoshua Hashem Elkimu Rama Havarta Havar. As Amazo, why did you take this nation over the Jordan to put us in the hands of the Amorim that we should die? We should have stayed on the other side of the Jordan. Be Hashem, Moreover, what are we going to say? We're running away from people. Everyone's going to hear. They're all going to hear. They're going to come make an alliance against us. What's going to happen? Matas Hashem Kol Gadol. Okay. Now it would seem that this seems to be an overreaction. I mean, you understand? I don't know which approach is better? If you say 36 people actually died, or it's just Yair Rumanashi? And of course, I could say Shurim about both of it, but just it seems a little funny. Just let me just finish this off, then you'll ask. Now, there's a Ramban. The Ramban and Dvarim Chaf Dalim. The Ramban says, let's see if there's a. The Ramban says, Pasuk says, V'dibur shochem alam lemer miyaisha sher bara ba'ischanish v'chanachal yech v'yashav vezel pinyaz v'muhamav yisha acher yech mechan. Who is a person who's made a house, a new house, and is not yet inaugurated? He's allowed to go home. Maybe he'll die in war. So the Ramban says. So that's over here. It's over here. It's actually Pesach wrong. That was Hey. Ki Hashem Elokecha Maharich Imlachem Imlachem Lachem Imoveichem Lachias. Because Hashem, your God, is going with you to fight for you with your enemies. He can save you. So the Ramban says. The Ramban says, "Chper Chaf Pasuk Dal Dvarim." The Ramban says, "Va'amar laHashiaskan." The pasuk says he could save you. You listening, Andrew? Careful. Shehem Yinatzu V'Mochama V'Yipachik Hanish. That they can be saved in war, and no one will die. Ki talking shinatzkos of Andy Musugan and Rabin Kidakamakamas. Because it's of course possible, and I would say normal, that you win the battle, but you lose soldiers. However, because Hashem can be with you, it's not necessary. But Al Kane Sark Yoshua bin Mufamehan Ba'ai Kishlash and Vishisha Ish, listen to this, Kibimuchamas Mitzvah Shalom, Yahirai Shibo Misaias Roshim Aratzak, Kibashama Mochama. Because in Yahshua's words, the Mechemes Mitzvah, like we saw, Yahshua is completing the Torah. The Torah tells us to do commandments with mitzvahs, but we don't do almost any of them in the Midbar. So if Yahshua is talking about doing it, it's Kiyuma Torah. No one should have died, and that's what Yahshua is so upset about. Kiyuma Hashem Amochama. Because Hashem is fighting the battle, like we saw, Kiyuma Amochama Yahshua. It wasn't the main part of these battles was not being fought in military tactics. They did have to have an army. They did have to do something. In other words, Kriyas Yamsuf is only Hashem. Kriyas Yamsuf, only Hashem. And that is called, as the Pasuk says, V'yotzeh Hashem, V'yotzeh Mugon, V'yotzeh Giyon HaRachma B'yom Krov. Hashem will go out and fight those nations like he fought the nations on the day of battle. That's talking about Mechemes Gogamalot. Hashem's going to go out and fight like he fought on the day of battle. What's the day of battle? The day of battle is Kriyas Yamsuf. Kriyas Yamsuf, everything Hashem did. Hashem's fighting you, stay quiet. And that's what's going to happen on some level. That's one level. The middle level is what Yahushua is doing. Yahushua, it's not a regular battle.
What about the battles in the desert?
Yeah, wait a second. It's not a regular battle. It's a battle that you have to do something. But Hashem's really doing more for you than you're doing. Now then there's a third daraga, which we'll see, wait a second, which is safe, many if not most of the battle is safe for Shoftim, and certainly David's Mechavos, David's wars, which is you're really doing the battle, and Hashem's helping you.
But do people die?
In the first two types of battle, no, people are not supposed to die. In the third type of battle, it's regular. That's life, you know. With the whole story at Rabbis Bnei Amar, which involves Uriah Hiti, please don't ask me any questions about it. David says, when you go to battle, there are casualties, and the pshat. It's not just a cold. Lying like that's just what happens. That is life, like you're saying. Like you go to battle, you lose some soldiers. There's no way, you know. It's like they say, Mili Da'amas. You want to make money, you got to spend money. There's no such thing as making money without spending money. So normally in battle, you have to take certain risks. Now you want to know what about the Midbar? Again, in the Midbar, then no one was supposed to die, and that's also a big deal when one person was captured by a Moloch, and we got to go on. Okay. Okay. So very good. So Hashem tells Yahushua, there's a problem. You guys made a cherem, I can't help you out now. You met a cheren. You proclaimed. Let's see. How do you translate cheren into English?
Excommunicate.
No, that's not it. A ban. No, that's a better word for that.
Not sanctified.
Yes, what is sanctified? The sort of sanctified. They made like a cheren is complicated, and it sets aside some things. What do you want to translate?
Spoils and boobies.
What do you word?
There's an exact word.
Excommunicate.
No, it's not excommunicate. Excommunicate is the law. Excommunicate is such a mistranslation that it's. Maybe it's just leave it as cheren and put this into the category of tefillin and phylacteries. You know, just tefillin and phylacteries. Just call it tefillin. What? It's like an untranslatable word. Sort of like chutzpah. Chutzpah in English is translated as chutzpah. What? Yeah, no, but. Chutzpah. Okay. Fine. Okay. They made a cheren. Hashem says, Yahushua, there's a cheren, guys. Sorry, I can't help you out. You're going to have to figure out what to do. Someone stole. I'm not going to be able to help you. Now, I'm just going to mention one midrash here. And even though I really hope it's a machlokas. It could be Gemara's chaluk, but maybe Josh will help us out on this one. Midrash says, There are three times Bezin Shamata did something, Bezin Shamata agreed. That the earthly court did something, and the heavenly court openly signed that yes, you were 100% right. Three times there was something was done, something was enacted by Bezin Shamata, by an earthly court, and the heavenly court said, stamped it and said, that's what's supposed to happen. Maybe it's four times, three or four times. One of the times, that midrash says, one of the times is this time with Yehoshua.
This wasn't a
base then,
it was
a... originally, no. Okay, Andrew, over time. Go, I understand what you're bothered by, but we'll talk about it over time. If you want. Okay. So, Hashem, Yehoshua says to Hashem, I'm just paraphrasing that to get as much done. Yehoshua says to Hashem, please tell me who did it. So Hashem says, I'm sorry, I can't. You're going to have to go make a figure out through Garal, through Lots. Through Lots. Now, the Midrash says, it could be it's even a Gemara, that Hashem said to Yeshua, what, you want me to tell you Lashon Hara? You want me to tell you Lashon Hara? You think I'm a Rachel? You think I speak Lashon Hara? You figure out yourself. You make the Chirim, you go figure out yourself. Yeah.
Isn't there a Rashi that says that they use the Urim Betrumim to base...
Oh, very good, very good. There it is. Very good. Very good. I didn't want to get into those complications, but since you mentioned it, there's a machlokas how they figured out which tribe. Maybe there's a Gemara. There is somewhere that they passed, that Yahushua was able to see that one of the stone of Yehuda was a little lighter than it should have been. It didn't shine as much. And from that, he was able to deduce that the tribe in which the person was a part of was Shevet Yehuda. However, it's an open machlokas. Other Midrashim learn that they used a garah for the entire thing. And, you know, I don't know... A Gara, very good. Wait a second. The Gara is lots.
He's not going to speak Lashon Hara.
So the Chafetz Chaim talks about it, and I'm just throwing you.
Dangle.
It's a half a dangle, and I'm throwing you just a little piece. You know what, Andrew? I'm throwing you a little piece. Is the less you speak, the better it is. You're right. Okay. No. Over dinner. Yeah. I hear you're bothered by. I have a different shiur that I said. I said a 20-minute shiur on this once. And if you want to listen to it, I'm happy to give it to you. But we got to go on. Okay. Now, what's a goro? Okay. The Sforno says. I'm quoting the Sforno now. Sforno is in Vayikra, Perek Tezayin Pasuk Ches. Svara says, Ki hagara bifat ayde ish chasido, hu kasha yishal ish b'dvar ha-lokim, ka'amu b'chekito ha-gara me'ashem kol mishpata. Because using a gara, and specifically through a chasid, through a very righteous person, it's as if a person is asking Hashem what to do, like the Pasuk says, b'chekito ha-gara, from his chest he pulled out the lot, and from Hashem was the entire justice. So a Gola, specifically using someone like Yahushua, Yahushua is just right under Moshe Rabbeinu. He's just right under Moshe Rabbeinu. This is considered almost open revelation. Right, so they get Achan's name out. They get Achan's name out, and I'm just really going to really fly through this because I have so much more to do. They get Achan's name out. There's a big question if Achan accepted it lying down or not. The Rashi's over here go with the opinion that he didn't. And Achan even turned to Yahushua and said to him, "You're trying to prove this with a garab. If I put you and Elazar HaKayin under a garab, why don't you just have to come out? What exactly do you think you're doing?" So Yahushua said back to him, I'm quoting Rashi, and there is machlokas about it, like almost everything else I said over here. Yahushua said back to him, Simna kavod l'Hashem al kayisrael v'sen lo soda, please give honor to Hashem, the God of Israel, and please admit, the haganami ma'asis v'asisa al tichachim mimeni. So Rashi says, Simna kavod, amr lo simna kavod b'vaksha mimech, please, al totzi razal garelos shibor sido haaretz v'chalik. Please do not say laz, do not say an insult, throw an insult at the garel, because we're going to split Eretz Yisrael that way. And as we saw in Sefer Shoftim, as we will see in Sefer Shoftim, it's not splitting Eretz Yisrael, it's not just stam, it's not just arbitrary. Each shayna, each tribe has the part of Eretz Yisrael that is going to correspond to the powers of that shayna. And that's why Al Totzi Razal Gara. Al Totzi Razal Gara. Please don't insult the Gara. The Gara is not just arbitrary. It's not just a guess. It's a real method. This was not a regular Gara. Also, because there's a little more to it than that. Also, but Al Totzi Razal Gara. So finally, Achan admits. Haman's not Ish Chasida. That's why I quoted. That is exactly why I quoted this morning. He had Gara befrat ayadei Ish Chasida, because the Gara, when it's done, threw a righteous hand into it. When Gaia was done through a righteous man, it says in Hashem speaking. Haman was certainly not a righteous man.
He also did a
poor,
not a
Goral. That's just a different man. That's not difficult. A poor and a Goral are just different words for the same thing. Okay, let's go on. You gotta go on.
There's a reason why they did
different ones. No, it's a good question. The Gemara Josh points out that the Gemara Sanhedrin says he seemed to trick him into doing it, into admitting. It doesn't mean that he actually tricked him. It means he convinced them into admitting. Wow. And the other midrash, not because you're seeing half the story. There's a different midrash which learns it very differently. And the pashta see, because the Gemara Sanhedrin, the Sugya Sanhedrin, is dealing with the dine vidui, that before a person's killed, they have to do vidui. And the Gemara understands that Achan did do vidui. But he needed to be nudged into it in order to fulfill the halacha vidui. And I want to go on. I just want
to
go on.
But so Yeshua didn't need him to do it in that he needed to find blame on him. He just needed him to do it so he could do vidui.
Right. Correct. That's what we're saying in that context. You see it even better when you see the other midrashim have a completely different approach, and they hold he didn't really admit. So that's like, sometimes you only can get shot in one minute or one gemara until you see what the other side of the story is. Okay, so they took Achan, by the way, and I'm going to go with the mainline approach. Yeah, I'm recording. I'm recording.
Are you paused
then? I did, but I unpaused it. Come on, let's go. Andrew, come on.
So make sure.
Okay. They killed Achan. They stoned Achan, Rashi says, because of Chil Shabbos. The reason why they were able to kill him, the mainline approach, is because he was Mel B'cherem, is because Yahushua proclaimed, quotes, a cherem, it's the cherem HaMelech, it's the king's cherem. When the king proclaims cherem, then as to quote the Ramban in Mishpat HaCherem, you have the right to kill him anywhere you want. And they chose to use Skila because of Chil Shabbos. Obviously it doesn't mean they were not Edom and Hasra in Chil Shabbos. That's what I'm saying. They chose...
But a king doesn't need Edom or Hasra.
No.
But
the king's Chayram doesn't... You're right. But Rashi over here in Yahushua says that they killed him with stoning because of Chil Shabbos. Obviously that doesn't mean they were Edom and Hasra because they weren't. Rather, it means that they had the right to kill him anywhere they wanted to, so they used Edom and Hasra, they used Skila, so he should have a kapara on the Chil Shabbos. Just let me finish it off, then, don't forget your question. his children, according to almost everyone, were not killed. His animals were stoned, and his possessions were burnt.
You said his children were not killed?
I said, even though if you read the Pesukim, you could think his children were killed. According to almost everyone, they weren't killed. According to those who they were killed, they participated in the action. Yeah. Everything's clear? Ariel's really first here. Yeah.
I have one question just about, so you mentioned Yeshua as a king. So is Yeshua, does he have that power as the leader of Israel at this point?
No, wasn't it to Hashem?
Yeshua has, whoever is holding, sitting in the executive branch, is equated with the king.
They have the powers.
They have certain powers of a king, certain powers they don't have a king, and when we get to say Vishavtim, I'll explain. Yeah.
For Achan, how come he didn't die like right away the first time they stoned? They hit them, like throw them off, didn't they throw them off the cliff also, right?
No, there's a process of stoning, and we're going to assume that they use the process, and that's what the Gemara Sanhedrin does assumes also. Yeah. Okay, forgot it. Okay, let's go. Okay, I'm going to really zoom through the second battle of Ai. I'm going to zoom right through it.
If rebelling against the king gives the...
It's not rebelling, it's cherem. Cherem and rebelling are not quite the same thing.
So in this case, you shouldn't have a rishus to say a chiyuv to do so?
Cherem is more cherem... Is it a complete... Over here, it was obligatory because Hashem told him, I can't help you out unless you actually go kill him. So, you have to get rid of him. So, he didn't have any choice.
Do we say that the
skill
was a
kapara? Absolutely do. Yeah. Was the skill a kapara? No question. The skill was definitely a kapara. Okay, let's run through the second battle of Ai very quickly. Let's see where the notes here. Okay.
Why were they punished for the first battle of
Ar? They were punished because another one. Why did they lose the first battle of Ar? Because of Achan. Because Achan was Mal B'Cherim, because Achan disregarded the law of the Cherim, they were punished, and it is considered one of the most classical examples of Arvus. The fact that all Jews are responsible for each other's actions. Classic example. Okay, second battle of Ar. Hashem tells Yeshua, don't worry, now you're going to be able to do it, you're going to conquer them, and he tells them to use ambush tactics. Now, the exact numbers are not 100% clear. It is clear as we go through the story, and I'm not going to have time to read all the Pesukim to show you this, that the people in Ai made an alliance with the people in Beis El. We're going to assume the people in Beis El was a city of similar size. That's what we're going to assume. So it doesn't seem to me that they could have had more than 5,000 to 7,000 soldiers. I and Beis El together. If there are only 12,000 people in I, and that first original estimate that you need 2,000 to 3,000 soldiers was accurate, so they get some allies. Great. When I said on this 4 years ago, I theorized maybe they hired mercenaries, but there's no proof anywhere to that at all, so don't even write it down. Try to forget I even said that one, because there's no proof to it. It's a nice theory, but there's no proof to it. Yehoshua took, let's say, approximately 350,000 soldiers. 350,000 with 600,000 men who were able to fight battle. A certain amount of people had to stay back and guard the Machaneh and Gilgal. Okay, very good. So how many people? It says it took Kol Am and Muhammad. It took everyone who had to go to war. So let's say 350,000 soldiers.
The first war.
So 3,000.
No, but how come he didn't go if he's a leader?
Okay, very good. That's part of the problem. One approach is the reason why they didn't win the first time is because there's a prescribed way the Torah to fight. Yeshua's supposed to fight the battles, there's a prescribed way, and because he didn't follow it, that's where they lost. So that's why he has to take everyone out. And even though in one sense it would seem that this is a normal battle, the other part of the point is that when you outnumber someone, let's say 20 to 1, normally you just go and steamroll right over them. The fact that they had to go out of the way to use tactics is showing the Malbim says this in the maybe even it's Ramban. At least the Malbim, possibly even Ramban, says this about the Mechanes Pelegesh Begiva, that when you go out of your way to use tactics, when you don't need to use tactics, that's showing that you're not depending on your strength, You're rather, you know, understanding that the true outcome of the battle is in Hashem's hands. Now, what happens is, I'm just going to really go through this quickly. What happens is they go and the Yahushua approaches the city with his army, his main body of army, which again, if he sent out 35,000 people, as you can see in the Pesukim, to be the ambushers, that means he's left with in the 300,000 area. And he makes a retreat in front of the people of Ai, runs away. The people of Ai run out after him. Now that is, again, I'm glad to see Yeshua saying, what in the world? It's like strange, you understand? He has 300,000 men, and they have, okay, let's say they have 8,000 men. What, they're crazy. So Rashi's, Meduyuk and Rashi, Rashi says, as we say explicitly for Rashi, the Pasuk Yedalim, it says, the Pasuk says, this Pasuk I'm going to read, when the king of Ai saw Yahushua retreating in front of him, they ran out, they were quick, all the people went out of the city to greet the Jewish people with a roar, at the time in front of the plain. What's the time? The Rashi brings, and I'm not sure if there's any clear source for this, was Zman Hayam Shinoatsu Yachal Me'etmo Ba'oso Shoa Neitze Shohoyu Menachashim Ma'onanim. They calculated through different forms of what we construe as black magic, even though that's not exactly what it was, that there's a certain time they'd be victorious, and at that exact time, Yahushua retreats. So they thought that according to the rules of Nichush, and Onan, that they have, they're going to defeat the Jewish people, and that's why they all ran out. Okay, so then Yahushua raises up, Hashem tells him to raise up his spear as a sign, and the ambushers come in from the other side, conquer the city, and they kill all the people in Ai, and wipe everyone out, and that's the second battle of Ai. And we're just going to have to leave it at that. There's, of course, a lot more to say, but we're just going to leave it at that. Because there's so much to do. It's a lot to do. Okay. The story of building the Mizbeach here is really happened the first day they crossed the Yarden. That's in the Perakas. That really happened the first day they crossed the Yarden.
That is the 12 stones.
That's the 12 stones. It's written down over here. It's when I went through it, and again 4 years ago, I wasn't sure exactly why. It's written out of order, and I'm still not sure.
How do you know it's talking about the first day?
Because that's what it says. That's the consensus. That's all the Mefarshim were that way. You know, from one source, from, you know, Rashi, the Radak, the Ramban, the Drashim, etc., etc. So, you know, if everyone learns it that way, then I'm a real classicist, and I learn it that way also. Okay, now let's go on. Now, they all hear, Pasuk says, very interesting, Pasuk says, Vahi Kishmapad, beginning Perektas, Vahi Kishmapad, Kol Mavachim, Asher Ve'Eva, Yarim, Vahar Veshvei, where they all hear about it. They make an alliance to fight the Jewish people. It's unclear if the people of Givon signed this alliance. I think when we're going to see, I hope to see, at least quickly, the story when they try to punish Givon. I don't think the people of Givon signed the alliance, but it's a general rule in Tanakh that when it says all, it doesn't have to mean every single one. It can mean almost every single one. So
makes sense. It would make more sense if they did that.
Yeah. I'll show you. Wait, we'll see. I don't know if I'm going to have time to show you, but I'm going to show you either later or over dinner or at the beginning of the night seder. The psukim are not mashma that's what they were mad at Givon for. Okay. The people in Givon heard what they did. They dressed themselves up, a whole big trick. They found the oldest bread. They found the oldest clothes, the most worn out shoes. They came to Yeshua and they said, we come from very, very far away. Okay. Now this, I want you to know that this story of Givon.
This is Yeshua's mistake.
This is Yeshua's mistake. It's one of the most complicated stories in Nach. I'm not exaggerating. There's mass amount of you know, there's Gemaras, there's Midrashim, Rambams, Rambans. It's really, really complicated. And
why?
It just is. This is because it all goes around. First, the first issue is Sheilos Shalom, is what the halacha and what the protocol is when you go to fight a battle. When you have to, do you have to ask for peace? When does that apply? There's a halacha, so that's a major machlokas Rishonim. On one side, we have Rashi and the Ravid. Rashi and the Rai would say that only applies to what's termed Mechemes Rishus, a war that is non-obligatory. Mechemes Rishus, like David. When David went and fought in Syria, Moab, Ammon, etc., etc., that's called Mechemes Rishus. He did not have to fight those battles. He wanted to fight those battles. There's a halacha called She'ilas Shalom, Psichas Shalom. You have to go out and offer them peace first. That means, it doesn't just mean we want to make peace with you, you're going to attack them. It means they accept what's called Mas and Shibud. Mas and Shibud means tax and feudal duties. Mas and Shibud are tax and feudal duties. Shibud means they have to work for you, that's feudal duties. And Mas means some monetary compensation.
Is that also
Gary Tosha? Okay, Josh. Josh wants to know, did they happen to become Gary Tosha? That, like almost everything I'm going to say is a Machlokes Rishonim? And that's a Machlokes Rishonim. The Ramban learns that if they're not in Eretz Yisrael, they don't have to become Gerei Toshav. And the Ramban learns they always have to become Gerei Toshav. Anyway, back to our point here is the Ravid and Rashi's approaches, the whole law of She'ilas Shalom only applies to Mechemes Rishus, but once we've crossed the Yarden, once we cross the Yarden with the Zion Am, with the Canaanite nations, there's no halacha of Shilas Rishus. The din is Rosachai Bo Meshavah. You have to kill them all up. You don't go and ask. So according to Rashi and the Ravid, in a certain sense, the parasha, the whole story here is smoother. We definitely understand why the Givonim had to resort to trickery. Because they were really stuck. Yeshua's crossed the Yarden. The halacha din Torah is that we have to kill them. And if they went to resort to trickery, they would have been killed. That's a good, Andrew, that's a good, you're asking good, and I say, I go, so I dangle, I can talk about it later, we just gotta get everything done tonight.
The other opinion is,
the Ramban, and most of the Tosfos and Shas. Tosfos talks about at least five places in Shas, and one of them is Mugid, and maybe you'll find it. that opinion is that She'ilas Shalom applies even after you cross the Yarden. And what about the Givonim? Didn't the Givonim know that they were still going to ask them and give them an opportunity to make peace?
No.
So the answer is what Andrew said. They didn't know. They were mistaken. You're right. They should have. They didn't need to trick us, but they did because they didn't know the halacha. Now, they gained out of next stage. Well, they gained a little out of it because they gained bris in the way Ramban and Chumash, which is Perak Chaf, Pasuk Yud and Yud Aleph. The Ramban and Chumash says that they gained two things. One, they didn't have to pay Mas and Shibud. That's what they're trying to gain. They did not have to. They did not have any tax or feudal obligation duties to the Jewish people.
I mean, they had
to be
water.
Yeah. We'll see. Great. I'm giving first the halachic background, and then we're going to go through the story. That's what they're trying to gain. What? Tosfos says what?
The Rambam,
Ramban, and Tosfos hold you still have She'ilas Shalom after you cross the Yarden.
Never in Mechamas Mitzvah.
What?
Never in Mechamas Mitzvah.
Even in Mechamas Mitzvah. Even in Mechamas Mitzvah. Rashi and Ravid ultimately only applies to Mechamas Rishus. And Tosfos, Ramban, and Tosfos hold even applies to Mechamas Mitzvah. But of course it means they have to accept Zionists as B'nai Noach. One Tosfos holds it up, but let's not worry about that Tosfos right now. Mechemes Amalek possibly is an exception, but that ain't coming. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like from the Shalom, like where later on, but it makes it seem like they offered some sort of deal also to the other nations that they fought. Very good.
That's one of the Ramban's riots. The Ramban says, later on it says, no one made peace except for the Givonim, and the Rabbi says that's a proof that they had to send out peace. That's the proof that they had to send it out. Excellent. Yeah, we'll see.
Just a question on Gerei Toshav. What does it mean that they have to accept Chemish the Zaynoch? Don't Goyim have to anyway?
That's sort of like a jurist prediction. That's like they should, but we don't. unless they're under, unless they accept our shlita, our power over them, it's not really our business if people in India are keeping these ailments as they know.
So,
according to many Rishonim, you can make a bris. There's all these in the big machlokes. That's a machlokes Rishonim. Some people hold if we make a bris, the Rambam holds if you make a bris, they have to accept it. They have to accept ailments as they know. If it becomes our business, the Ramban holds not.
If they're a geir toshav, so we're allowed to punish them? In other words, if they
that's a good question. Good question. I'm not sure. I could say something about it, but it's all like more theory than effect. Yeah. Josh, a little more?
So in like Malchus David, for example,
David
can always go...
Malchus David. Josh wants to know, in David's reign, when he ruled over a lot of nations, did he enforce the Shlain and Sisman and Oath? So I'm going to say... No. What?
Could he just like go into like the outer regions of his kingdom, pull it away, like away from it, like outside his kingdom, just want to burn it out?
From outside his kingdom, I don't think so. Wait a second. Show us. Guys. Did David enforce the Zion Mitzvah Ben Noach in his kingdom? That's a machlokas. Rambam and Ramban. According to the Rambam, he did. According to the Ramban, he didn't. He only enforced it on people who were very close by. But we got to go on.
How do you know you're so smart?
You'll find out. Let's go on. Okay. Let's go on. So they come in. Again, according to the Rambam, according to the Rambam and the Ramban, they have to trick us. They have to. They didn't have to trick us. They just didn't know anything. Okay? According to Rashi and the Raya, they had to trick us. But let's see what happens here. So they come and they tell us the whole story. They show them everything. We heard about how great you are and how great Hashem is. And we want to be, we want to make an alliance with you. Please make an alliance with us. Look, here's our bread. Look at our bread. It was fresh when we left home. And now it looks either moldy or dry or it's all, it's really not good. Look at these wine sacks. They were like fresh wine sacks when we left. And now they're cracked. And our shoes and our clothes. Okay, it says everyone, they bought the story. Yeah.
They said they were doubtful whether they're telling the truth or not, right?
They weren't really sure. According to, it's clear from the pasuk. For example, the pasuk says, "Vayikhu hanashim yitzedim as pi Hashem roshalu." They literally means they took their food. It means they fell into the trap, and they didn't ask Hashem. The pasuk's clearly criticizing Yeshua and the Nasiim for not asking Hashem. Does that mean through the Urim Turim? Does it mean through Nevuah, through Tefillah? Unclear. Why should they have figured it out? I have two approaches. I don't have absolute proof to either one. One is they probably should have asked them more clearly exactly which country they came from. They said, we come from a very far away country. If they would have interrogated them more about where they came from, then they would have figured it out, or possibly they should have been able to figure out from their accents that they didn't come from such a faraway country. That's from Sunni. The Ramban says that the spoken language in Eretz Yisrael was Ivri, and they should have been able to figure out that their Hebrew was a little too good. So if their Hebrew is so good, they obviously don't come from such a faraway country. Those are my two approaches.
So why would the logical move be to ask God? Like, why would they just totally not do it?
Why didn't they ask God? Why didn't they ask the Urim and Thummim? That's a general rule, which I'm just going to just dangle another one in front of you. You don't ask the Urim and Thummim a question unless you are really sure, A, you need to, and B, that you are pure, absolutely pure. If you've done something wrong and you ask the Urim and Thummim a question, you're going to get what we call a funny answer. And the classic example of that is the story of Pelegesh Begiva, which we'll see in, let's say, 6 to 8 weeks. When you see the story of Pelegesh Begiva in 6 to 8 weeks, they ask the Urim and Thummim, they were given answers, and they still lost a lot of people in battle. Because there was something in the background which they had done wrong. Over there was Pasal Micha. Well, over here, it depends. That depends on the Rishonim. I'm not sure. It's a good question. There was still hesitant, but it's normal to exercise. My point is, and we see this also, David HaMelech, when there's a rab, there's a famine for 3 years, he only asks Hashem the third year. It's normal procedure not to just go around and ask him to him a question because of the level of pureness, of completeness needed in order to get the proper answer. Okay. Yeah, it's amazing. It's seven. Okay, again. They asked for a bris, they were given a bris. The bris does more. We discover later that we discover 3 days later that they tricked us. Okay. Now, what is clear, now it says the Jewish people wanted to kill them. The Lehikim, they didn't kill him. Why didn't we kill him? So the men right approach.
They made a bris.
No, but the bris wasn't chal. The bris, because they tricked us, if I trick you into selling me something or into making a deal, and then it's shown, and then it's shown, and it's shown that I totally lied to you and the conditions I made are not true, then it's not a mechira. The mechira, the sale is not a sale, and it's not applicable. However, because over here they swore in God's name, that they're not going to, that this bris, that this agreement is going to take effect, because of the Chil Hashem, which wouldn't be involved, a Jew swearing in God's name, and it looks like, as Andrew said, it looks like an agreement, because of Chil Hashem, even though the bris didn't apply, they didn't kill them. However, the bris still, in other words, what does bris mean? Bris doesn't mean agreement. Bris is what Ramban says, bris means that you don't pay taxes, you don't have feudal duties, and we're your open allies. Because they tricked us, even though we didn't kill them, nonetheless, the positive conditions of bris did not apply.
Well, then why did we help them when they called for help?
Oh, very good. That's great. I'm setting it up. That's great. You're right. But the open proof to this is what did they do? So everyone was very mad at Yeshua and the Nesim. They said, what did you guys do? You messed up. You messed everything up. So they said, okay, we have an answer. We'll make them into chutveits and shoreline. We'll make them into water carriers and wood choppers. So if they have a bris, and by definition a bris means you don't have mass and shiloh, how can you make it? How can you make a certain type of avos on them? So the answer obviously is the bris didn't take effect. Okay. Okay, let's go on. I want to see at least the beginning of the battle. Maybe up to the battle. I don't know. Let's see how quick we can do this. Okay, so it says that the five kings, the king of Yerushalayim, Chevron, Yamus, Dvir, Eglon, and Eglon, were all upset at the Givarim for breaking ranks. It doesn't say they accused them of breaking an alliance. So from that, I want to infer that the Givarim did not sign the alliance we saw spoken about earlier. They did not sign that. They just said they were just upset at them for breaking ranks. They said, okay, we're going to go and wipe out Givon. So they went and started putting Givon under siege. The Givonim sent a message to Yahshua and said, please help us out. The Pasuk uses what the Ramban would term Lashon Beinoni. Beinoni means in the middle. The Givonim didn't say, you must help us out. If the bris would have taken effect, then we would have been obligated to take them out. They just said, please help us. Will your servants help us out?
Why is that? That's the bris was...
Because the bris did it. Because, again, the bris was... Because they tricked us into making the bris really didn't take effect, and they weren't able to obligate us into helping. When Avram Yishmael, Avram Kimish, Ba'achiv, V'yarkas Kamichav, when Avram heard that, look, he signed a covenant with them to help you, whatever happens, I'm going to be right next to you. He went. It doesn't say he ran. He didn't have a choice. What did he have to send a message? I mean, here, they send a message, please help us. And please help us, that means you're not obligated. Okay, so Yeshua, again, Medina, technically Yeshua could say, take a hike, guys. He doesn't have to do it. But because they were suffering for their connection to the Jewish people, Yeshua decides to go and help them. The Yahushua by Yeshua, not only is he helping, this comes to the greatest revelation which occurs in the entire Sefer Yeshua. From the greatest points in the whole Sefer comes from what is definitely a double with the Yeshua Sadin. They've gone beyond the letter of the law twice. The priest wasn't Chal. They could have killed the Givonim, but because of Chal Hashem, they did it. There's no real agreement. But because you have this identity with us, we can help you out. And this point is with this great thing. Yehume, Hashem comes first stage of the battle by Yehume Hashem. Just to make a long story short, by Yehume means Hashem attacks him with lightning and thunder. It's an explicit Rashi in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Zion. Perek Zion, Pasuk Yud. Perek Zion, Pasuk Yud. By Yehume means they're attacked with lightning and thunder. Whenever it says that anywhere in Tanakh, the technical definition of the word is confusion. That's what it technically means. Most places in Tanakh, the Targum translates as confusion, whether I'm talking about Targum Onkelos, or Targum Yonason, or Targum Yerushalmi, the Targumim always translate to a word which means confusion. Over here, the Targum translates the Sabrinon, they were broken, because it was a greater display of lightning and thunder. And again, Lord the Lord of Yahshua! This battle was not won by military prowess. First stage. So then they're running all over the place. I'm not sure if it means the Jewish people were wiping them out or the lightning and thunder kept attacking them. Stage two. They're running from the Jewish people in front of Beis Charon. The Hashem, Hishlech Aleihem, Avadim Gdolos, Minishmai, Adaseika. The Yamusa, the people died. The pasuk explicitly says more people died from the stones and the hail than the Jewish people killed by sword. These stones are other places called Abe al Gabish. According to Chazal, they are, if they, I don't know if they're the actual physical pieces of bone which fell in Egypt or not. I'm not sure about that. I don't think it's that important. There's certainly conceptually the continuation of the Barad in Mitzrayim, the Barad, the hair in Mitzrayim, was continued over here. It's going to happen, I believe, one more time. I'm pretty sure it happens in with Sisra also. And the grand finale is Mechamez Gog Magog, as Rabbi Yechezkel talks about Amnei Al Gabish. And we're going to call, now let's do one more thing, one last thing. I can't stop. If you want to leave it. Yeshua says, he says publicly, now if you read the Pesukim carefully, you'll see it's very not exactly what happens, not 100% clear. According to Chazal, I'm just summarizing, but if you look at the Pesukim, you'll see that you basically have to learn this way. Yeshua only stopped the sun twice. He stopped the sun twice. First in the middle of the day, because the pasuk says, "V'yamun Hashem b'chatzi yeshamayim." Sun stopped in the middle of the sky, and when the sun's in the middle of the sky, for anyone who doesn't know, I mean, I know we're like postmodern guys, so we don't, a lot of people don't realize this. When the sun's in the middle of the sky, you do not see the moon. You always see the moon in the morning or at evening.
Really? How does he stop the sun?
Yeah,
so Shem. God actually
stopped. The pasuk that we're going right now. Don't ask me the physics of this. We don't. The Torah is not written as a physics book. Don't ask me the physics. You want to know, does it mean the earth stops spinning? Or does it mean, I don't know. That's a good question. Impossible to know, impossible to answer. I refuse to analyze it.
Or isn't there a deal to like, I feel like scientifically proved that like there was like one day in time.
No, that's urban legend on the internet. An email, if you get an email like that every 7 years, it's not true. It's just like Microsoft's not giving away $1,000 for each email you give. You say, yeah, so too. That's not true either. There's no scientific, that's not possible at all.
What's the legend?
Later. It says the sun stopped in the middle of the day, you don't see a moon. And then it says the moon stopped, so it's obviously twice. Why did he do it? He did it. It just happened in order that Yahushua should be able to properly win the battle, which means capturing the kings like we see. He captured the kings, he wiped out all the people, and went back and killed the kings. He needed extra time to do that, so Yahushua says, okay, Hashem, I need you to stop the sun, and that's what happened. And another aspect of the greatness is, wait a second, and then you can ask a question, is that Yahushua was able to kill. This is greater. You know, this is like all the miracles I say about the Gra, I say, very nice. But the fact that we pass in the halacha like the girl against Rebbe time, and we end Shabbos 30 minutes after Shkia, and before the girl came around, everywhere in Rebbe time, that's a bigger method, that's a greater miracle than anything else he did. Changing the halacha, that's unbelievable, that's reality. Yehoshua is according to Chazal, Shira Shemesh B'Nivon Dom, all the different constellations, all different parts of the world say Shira to Hashem. Yehoshua says, Shemesh B'Nivon Dom. The son has to say Shira? Don't worry, we'll say Shira for the son.
What?
We will say Shira instead of the son. And Hashem said, okay, fine. If you're able to do that, if you're able to fill that spiritual part of the world, fine, no problem. Yeshua is able to do that. That's unbelievable. Mind-boggling. I see I have Yeshua. So Josh,
yeah.
Tell me on the floor. I think I really also you guys know on the floor. It really takes a lot more time to explain all this. But this is where I'm gonna stop. If you have questions, I'll answer them. But to probably understand that is a very long shear. Yeah.
Why can the son give
shear? The son gives shear by continuing its normal movement. When the son stopped, he was not only telling the son to stop, he was telling the son, the shear you're saying is not necessary now, we will be able to fill your place and say that Shira and fulfill, say that Shira that Hashem Kiviyachol. There are spiritual laws in the world also that keep the world running, and some of them are, one of them is that the different parts of the world say Shira in a spiritual way to Hashem.
Why can't the son doing that stop doing that?
That's a good question, Josh. That's an excellent question, and I'm not holding Be'ilin in this enough to answer that question.
The son isn't doing anything different.
No, you're asking. Let me ask you a question. You're asking. The son's doing Ratzon Hashem by moving over here. It's doing Ratzon Hashem by staying still.
No, it's not. It's doing Ratzon Hashem by stopping and
stop
doing
something. I hear the questions. Good question. I can't answer you right now. I can't answer it right now. Are you? That took care of your problems also?
It kind of explained my question.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I can't completely explain this. I'm doing the best job I can. You know, something like this, I don't believe I found a Maharal about it 4 years ago, because if I did, I probably would have spit that out at you, at least in some form. And that's the best way I understand it.
And why are you so sure
that? The urban legend.